This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Stephen, and congratulations to everybody who stayed the course this far. I'm talking about social care, but actually it's got a lot of connections with our previous speakers, because in many ways this is being a technological change. Equally, it's a sort of landscape change, and I'd like to argue that there's also a lot of emotional change going on as well. Almost your computers may not recognise some of these words, or perhaps they're so familiar with them that they can just say the words with you almost breathing. My computer never really liked personalisation for a start, because it kept on putting in a Z in, and I would spend all my time trying to correct it. And of course, something like social care transformation, it probably was wanting to say, what happened to modernisation? Why aren't you mentioning that anymore, you old trout? Why, you know, get on with it. Surely we're meant to be modern. And I had to tell it very firmly that we are all now transformed. The personalisation agenda is a word which is almost coaching horses, isn't it? Is the agenda driving personalisation, or is personalisation driving the agenda? Who knows? But it's an interesting phrase, the personalisation agenda, because actually I've never ever heard a person using services speaking of it. They talk about many other things, and some of those I'll try and convey in this presentation. So, the answer to this question, of course, is this one. How long is a piece of string? How far have we got? We don't know. It depends what you're measuring. And indeed, you probably would say it's a number of pieces of string, and many people might like to use the metaphor, it's a bit of a bowl of spaghetti, because once you start pulling on one part of it, another part works loose, and so on and so forth. So, London characteristics, just looking at those in relation to the really big spends in social care. You might think that London doesn't spend much on social care, and probably you know that London's older population is much less than many other parts of the countries. Despite that, it spends a phenomenal amount on nursing and residential care, much of it outside the M25 barrier. It spends 486 and 514 million on residential and nursing home respectively. The margins for this are very healthy. One of the interesting things in looking at the trade press is that there is very little mention of the word recession, closures, downturns, and so on. Most providers, particularly in residential and home, residential and nursing care, less so in home care, of course, are not being too badly affected by the current economic downturn. Indeed, many of them, if you give them a glass or two, will speak very confidently about how, for the first time ever, they've had rather full staffing complements, and they haven't had people nipping off to the local Woolworths, because of course it doesn't exist. London spends quite a lot on home care. Of course, it spends an enormous amount on informal care, but this is just the home care setting, and you can see it's just over 400 million. These are annual figures. And the large reliance on family care is what you might expect, but also undermines those stereotypes that people living in London lead rather insular lives, family structures have broken down, it's part of broken Britain, and so on. Family care in London is as much as it ever was in the days of Young and Wilmot, when you and I did sociology in kindergarten and so on. What, of course, is featured among London is that it is the most diverse city of older people than there probably ever has been on the planet, let alone in England. It is ethnically diverse. It is diverse in terms of family formations and partnerships. It's hugely diverse in terms of income and in health, as Michael Marmot points out. It is just enormously diverse. And so there's a lot to learn from it. Indeed, London's population are also not old, only retired if they're elderly. It is the major place in the developed world that older people are working. About 10% of London's older people are working in the formal sector, and most of them aren't here in this audience because they're probably picking up their grandchildren from school or playgroup. So, you've probably seen this. This is the colour of personalisation. It's very useful, isn't it, when the Department of Health chooses a colour for which particular agenda it's driving. You think, oh, that's a purpley, bluey document. It must be about personalisation. And that's really helpful, and long may that continue. Personalisation isn't just about personal budgets. That, of course, is perhaps the most prominent feature of them, but Guy's going to later talk about how much it's about prevention, how much it's about intergenerational work, how much it's about adult safeguarding. In fact, there's almost nothing in social care that personalisation is not about, but I'm going to focus on personal budgets, sometimes known as self-directed support. And you do need to swallow a dictionary when you're looking at this area, because there are so many names being thrown about, and people will say, we don't do personal personal budget, we do individual budgets, and people say we don't do self-directed support, we do consumer-directed support, and we're all reliant on the American systems, which strangely enough are called cash and counselling for some reason. Much the same thing, but actually very, it just, you have to unpick, I think, is what I'm learning, and learn what people are meaning. And that applies in London, where some local authorities are using one term and they think they know what it means, and another local authority will have exactly the opposite view. They think that knows what they mean. They think they know that's what it means. In the early days, it was around this subject of individual budgets, which of course have come now into health services, and their pilot schemes are up and running, or at least people are running after the pilot schemes, perhaps. Individual budgets have farther fallen by the wayside. At its most sort of rarefied sense, they were seen as blended funding streams in a sort of smoothie approach to social care services, in which you could have money from access to work, community equipment, independent living fund, social care and supporting people, and they would all emerge out of and one person would get a budget which they would know how much it was, what they could spend it on, and when it would be arriving in their bank account. Of course, that didn't happen. People needed accountants to manage those funding streams if they ever had them all together at the same time in the same place. What we've seen, I think, particularly in social care, is that adult social care is the main trunk of this, and in many councils, supporting people monies are being moved to it. You might say that's not terribly difficult, is it? Because supporting people is actually run in the same corridor as most adult social care. So if those two can't talk to each other, other than about spatting about car parks, there's no hope for us all. But it has been a major building block in local authorities to really tie housing and adult social care much more tightly. And people like John Novotny, who were talking this morning, have got those dual responsibilities, which nowadays they're being seen as integrated in places like London Borough of Greenwich. The other word we need to pick up sometimes is this notion of deployment. When personal budgets came in and individual budgets, their forerunner, many people thought that they were the equivalent of direct payments, which is when people get cash for care. Of course, they don't actually get cash. You don't see social workers standing in Walthamstow handing out £5 notes. What they're doing is paying monies into people's bank accounts. But notionally, it's cash for care. There are, though, people who say that that isn't appropriate for some people, and indeed many older people say that that's far too much hassle for them. Thank you very much. If you get adult social care through publicly funded sources, you're liable to be either critically or substantially in need in social care, and what you don't need is probably an employment relationship and the insurance and so on that often entails. So people have said, let's have different forms of employment. These are a bit like unicorns. Many people claim to have met different forms of employment, and some people could probably draw you a brief sketch, but they are rather few and far between, and many of the ones that people say, oh, there was a unicorn down that road in Epping Forest, you want to check that out, because it doesn't always happen. Different forms of employment, though, are around the notion that you might give to your care provider your budget and say, manage that on my behalf. Here's my £5,000. I'd like to draw on it with you, care company, in whatever way that's possible. And some weeks I like quite a lot, but in other weeks my sister's coming and I won't need so much, and so on and so forth. So that's an individual service held account form of deployment, which may or may not work. It's going to be okay if you keep within budget, but actually people who are employed on that basis, particularly if they're trying to buy continuity of care, don't actually think, well, I'm not going to work this week, so-and-so's sister is coming. They still need that money, and so on and so forth. It's generally applicable to adult social care. However, there are quite a number of experiments going on in London around personal budgets for children who are disabled, and great claims, I think, and some of them very true, that this has revolutionised people's lives in terms of respite or short break care. So, for example, I know of a caravan park in East Yorkshire whereby the personal budget of a family living in North London is being used with a local care company to provide the social care for that child, and therefore releasing the family to have the holiday in the caravan park, even in this weather. So these things are working. A lot of them are pilotitis. They work very well because they're small, they're jewels in the crown, and we've yet to see them roll out to everybody in every way. What this is about is part of the process of transforming adult social care, which the government gave some money. A lot of that has been spent on innovation and people to champion this. And like most things where there's been a champion, people do get overloaded with other championing activities. I did some work on people who are older people's champions, and they had to pause to think how many things they were championing, and sometimes they forgot which ones they were supposed to be championing. They had so many. So let's look at personal budgets. Here's something that's drawing on an individual person, because actually this helps explain things to people, even if you're the local authority or a PCT accountant. There's this magic algorithm called a resource allocation system, which doesn't actually exist unless people say it does. It's the way in which social care funding is awarded to individuals. How is that done? Well, it's by a bit of, points means prizes, in a sense, how disabled, how many needs you have, also reliant upon where spend was for various client groups in the past. And there are going to be big issues around equity. We've known for some time that older people receiving social care generally get less money than adults of working age, and that is going to be very obvious once these figures are published, and you can work out for yourselves perhaps how the resources are being allocated. There is a tendency to try and say, let's not spend too much time on this within our local borough, let's wait until the national system comes, and many people are waiting for what they hope will be a national system. But let's pretend that one exists and that a certain person called Mrs. James is getting £5,000 a year to meet her needs for social care. Obviously there's still an eligibility criteria, and she is of course still means tested. One of the difficulties has been with personal budgets is that there's been a lot of hype with them, and a lot of service user groups have got very interested and have queued up to say, where can I have my personal budget, and have been really disappointed to find that it is still means tested and it's still only applicable if you're in critical or substantial care needs according to the local authority. However, Mrs. James has got one, and she wants to spend this on somebody she's calling a personal support worker. Actually, it's her niece, Maureen, and a quarter of it she's going to spend on getting her neighbour to take her to church. This is what she wants to do. It's her outcomes, it's her goals, it's her person-centred, all those phrases that are associated with the transformation of social care. And while Maureen's on holiday, Mrs. James is using part of that budget to pay for a stay at Claremont Court, which is a local older people's home. They call it a hotel for the elderly. However, what happens, as does often, Maureen falls off the camel in Marrakesh, as these things occur, and Mrs. James therefore stays longer in the hotel for the elderly, also known as short break care for the elderly. Does she have to ring social services? Does she have to get reassessed? No, this is a relationship between Mrs. James and the care provider, and really it's up to her to then work out the budget. She may be able to go back to social services, adult services, but indeed she may not. She's had to budget for contingencies, for emergencies, for all these things that happen. So it's a way really of making sure that her support plan, when it's designed, has built-in safeguards for the what-ifs, because there isn't extra money for Mrs. James. She's had her lot in many ways. So all of this is really about hearts and minds, as well as the technical transformation of adult social care. In many ways, particularly older people have often been offered social care on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. The care assistant can come at 6 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the evening, and put you to bed. No, they don't work any later than that, and actually they won't come on this estate after 6 o'clock or when the lights have gone out either. Older people particularly have not been happy with that. They have complained to councillors, to anybody who would listen, that this form of social care doesn't work, doesn't promote the type of life they want. It's promoting then a change in that and saying to people like Mrs. James, what do you really want to do? Going to church is perhaps what Mrs. James wants. She may not want a hot meal every day or to go to a day centre, which perhaps was on offer before. There's transformation going on, and part of this in many parts of the country is actually really rethinking the commissioning of day services. And so in many county councils in particular, there are day centres with closure notices already served on them. I haven't picked up that too much in London, but it does alter the pattern and the system, doesn't it? Because we know that many places like day centres are used really as day hospitals used to be, and a lot of them are used for safeguarding purposes, and a lot of them enable other family members to go out to work and so on and so forth. So there are always changes within the wider systems when these things start to happen. And it may be that we're beginning to see the start of something that people are as old as I am remember seeing, which was the closure of long-stay hospitals, in that day centres may also be the buildings under closure at the moment. There are a lot of hassle factors around all this relationship, because Mrs. James has got to work out whether Maureen wants a contract, how the insurance will work, whether she's going to pay a national insurance, is she going to do holiday leave, how is she going to take up a CRB check, or what would shortly be an ISA check, Independent Safeguarding Authority check, and so on and so forth. To reduce those, we are seeing the creation in many London boroughs and beyond of people in a sort of paraprofessional role who are brokers. But there has been a lot of criticism that brokers is reinventing new professionals, when actually the money is supposed to go to individuals rather than to a new body of practitioners. There are serious concerns about safeguarding. Maureen may not be as wonderful as her aunt thinks. She may be fully intent on fleecing her aunt of her savings. She may be wanting her to hand over the house or the cat or whatever. Maureen may not be very nice, and she may have some very unpleasant friends. There is nobody, perhaps, who will pick that up until very late in the day. Mrs. James may become more vulnerable, she may become more cognitively impaired, she may have something like Alzheimer's, and it may be that people are more isolated in this relationship. And one of the big issues for local authorities is how much they do monitor and how much they can let it be a light touch, and indeed how much they can tell other people in communities, like Mrs. James, GPs and practice nurses and people like that, that they too have a role in being the eyes and ears for this new system. There's better engagement, I think, at borough level in local authorities than many other groups around. Not surprisingly, it's their money and their responsibilities. I've spoken to people in the NHS who had never believed that direct payments were possible, and they've been about for 20 years. They say it cannot be possible that people receive cash for care. And I say, yes, it is. So there is a lot of hearts and minds around other professionals, particularly around the private sector, who is a little bit concerned that, having had very large contracts, a lot of those, that these are under renegotiation and that their staff will be placed in jeopardy. So how far have we got? We don't know. In many ways, we've got further than many people think. People like Mrs. James are existing, not too many stone throws away from here. There are people like her with notional or real personal budgets. And this is something that they're enjoying. The quality of life for them, in many cases, is good. And our individual budget evaluation, using an RCT methodology, did say that outcomes were generally better, particularly if you could remove the hassle factor for older people. It's obviously less than many people would like. Some people would like to have everybody getting a personal budget, no more block contracts, no more institutions, very much a market in which quality can be driven up by people like Mrs. James saying, Maureen, your fish fingers are awful, I'm going for the chippy. So in many ways, it hasn't gone as far. But the key is not so much the direction, but let's thinking around some measurements to conclude on this. First of all, is it a better use of public funds? People like Mrs. James would say so. They would say it is a better use of their money to employ Maureen directly. They know what they're getting, they feel they can hire or fire her, and indeed they can take on more people if their needs arise and they get greater money. And they are getting better value than they're getting from privately paid home care at the moment. So if you're in somewhere like Lambeth, you're paying about £13 an hour for your home care, and it may not be the type of home care that you're wanting. Are people getting real choice? Well, that all depends, doesn't it? If somebody like Mrs. James wanted to go to a day centre and it no longer exists, then actually her choices are limited. If she does want to employ Maureen, that's okay. Or perhaps she wants to do quite a lot through other mechanisms. And there will be debates around the proper use of public funds in this respect. Supposing she wants to get a robot or something like that, we'll have to see. And I suppose the last issue is really thinking about people's control, yet it not being out of control, because there could be a great deal of distress if people were left to be exploited, if their care was of very poor quality, and that would have great impacts upon health services and other publicly funded organisations as well. So, of course, there's no answer to the question I was posed. I was going to say that we would end with a drink afterwards, but I've been advised that that is no longer possible, so here's a cup of tea to look at instead. Thank you.